That's later tonight. We are in House Finance Room 519 here in Juneau, Alaska. It is 1:35. In House Finance this afternoon with us is Representative Darrow, Representative Wilson, Tammy Wilson, Representative Berg, Representative Hawker, Representative Costello, Representative Edgman, Representative Dugan, myself, Representative Fairclough, Vice Chair of the Committee, chairing today's meeting. The work products before the committee today, Thursday, March 31st, 2011, will be taking testimony in reviewing HB 78, Incentives for Certain Medical Providers, HB 103, Power Project from the Alaska Energy Authority. And if you recall, our chairman yesterday told us that HB 127 and 175 would be rolled together. So we'll be looking at that in a CS. If you'll support me in adopting that CS, we'll take public hearing on that. So is there any discussion on the proposed agenda for today? With that, if the sponsors or the speakers for HB 78, Incentives for Certain Medical Providers, come forward. Representative Heron, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Bob Heron, I represent the Kuskokwim in Western Alaska. As a term of endearment, I'm to the Madam Chair. It's good to be in rarefied air up here. So, House Bill 78. As you know, Alaska has faced a health care provider shortage, especially in primary health care. It has long faced it. It's a problem all throughout Alaska, and it's getting worse. So this legislation creates a support for service program to attract medical professionals to Alaska. It's common elsewhere. Alaska is one of only four states that does not offer this to healthcare providers. South Carolina, Idaho, and Hawaii are the others. Ideally, market forces would take care of this and provide Alaskans with access to quality care. But it's not happening, and our need is only getting larger and growing. Now, this proposed legislation, Healthcare Professions Loan Repayment Incentive Program, is based on a 2007 proposal assembled by a work group of Alaska Primary Care, by the Alaska Primary Care Council. Healthcare providers who participate in the program may choose one of two tracks: loan repayment if they have an outstanding loan, or a direct cash incentive. This direct incentive option, not used by many other states, will give Alaska an edge we need. The ability to attract well-experienced mid-career professionals whose student loans and their debt is behind them. Now, Alaska does participate in some federally funded workforce support programs, but they don't really address the unique needs that we have. So we think that House Bill 78 will fill those gaps with a strong program built for Alaska, built for Alaskans. Now, it's not the answer to our health care needs, but it's a step in the right direction, one that we can take right now. And many people believe that it will show great returns with a relatively small investment. Now, 46 states have similar programs and found them to work. So, as you see in the support packet, you'll see lots of support. So, Madam Chair, I have two young ladies in the audience and one online. My staff, Liz Clement, as well as Pat Carr from the department, and Diane Barron's online for technical questions. And we are ready to answer any questions if you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Heron. We have a CS, or I have a CS in my packet. Is that the vehicle that you would like us to consider before the body today?
The Hess version? Yes, Madam Chair.
I have a CS. Yeah, it doesn't say it's
I believe that we did make some amendments in the prior committee. The R version.
Thank you. Representative Wilson, could you move the CS before us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move CS for House Bill number 78-LS0147-R.
I have an objection, so we can discuss.
Objection for discussion purposes.
Thank you. With that, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Herron, actually, when I walked in, I told you I supported the bill, and I support the concept, and I will tell you that I'll support the bill regardless of how it comes out, which takes out any negotiating power that I have.
there's something about you like incentives, or you don't like them?
This one, actually, I think has incentives in it. Like you said in your statement, and like many of us have learned as we faced the Medicare doctor shortage, the primary care doctor shortage, probably the biggest shortage we have in the physician world is in primary care, in family physicians. And it's for a few reasons. They get paid the least, largely, or close to the least. And, you know, probably other reasons I don't know. And I know that there are other areas where we periodically have shortages. But as one of my friends says, who's a heart doctor, you know, you can make a lot of money up here as a specialist because we don't have HMOs. And so, like heart doctors, it's not uncommon for a heart doctor to earn about $500,000 a year, which is not a problem. They do very important work. But I would be much happier with the bill if it had a priority for primary care providers. Not the bill directed just at primary care providers, because we'll find out that here or there we're going to have shortages in other areas. But if there's limited money, I wonder if you might be amenable to having a factor in here where you list the criteria for getting the relief to have a priority for primary care providers. Because that really is by and large, the biggest problem we have.
Through Madam Chair, Representative Guerra, we think, and I guess it's within the bill, that's where we think it's going to be most effective. At least it's my hope that that's how the process deals with it. Primary care, especially in clinics. It doesn't matter where the clinics are. That's where the shortage is. And you've identified the biggest shortage is, you know, affordable primary care providers for just folks out there that they need early detection before it really gets bad. So I'll work with you on how do I maybe improve that inherent priority process. And I would look forward to people that are on the front lines to help us identify that and maybe improve it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Guerra.
Did you say that? I know that's your intention too, just like you said. So, and I'm happy to work as hard as I can with whoever we need to just nail that down. Did you say that there is language in here right now directing it towards primary care, or that's just the hope?
Through Madam Chair, Representative Guerra. You know, that's my intent, I think, and maybe Pat Carr and other people can zone in on that a little better. I could ask Liz as well, but that's my intent, and I believe the process will identify those first. We won't be jumping over primary care places to get to those maybe a little more attractive or quote-unquote more sexy jobs that are out there that people can get here in Alaska, or, you know, the services they would provide. So I'll, again, through Madam Chair, again, I'll work closely with you on that.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know other states have this. Did you model this after any particular states in which there might be some statistics to look at how successful it was?
I'll defer to Liz.
Thank you, Representative Herron. Through the chair, for the record, my name is Liz Clement, staff to Representative Herron. Representative Wilson, I apologize, but I actually would like to defer that question to Pat Carr, perhaps others who are in the audience, who are actually members of the work group that assembled the initial proposal. I know they did look at several other states, which specifically in which components were drawn from each. I would rather leave them to make sure you get accurate information.
As long as it's part of the data, I can wait. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may, in on page 5, you talk about the number of participants at the bottom of the page. Well, I understand, maybe Pat Carr would be a better person if this came out of a working group to understand why the number 90 came up and why the division.
Thank you, Representative Gutenberg. If I could focus the conversation, is there a difference, and if you could explain that, between the original introduction and the CS that's before us, and then we'll go into public testimony so that we can hear from those that are waiting. We do have a few people online as well as in the audience waiting to speak to us on this issue.
Yes, Madam Chair, changes from the version to the original version to the R version is that on page 3, line 10, new words are lending institution or to eligible health care, and that was a conforming change, essentially allowing payment to either the health care professional or their lending institution. Page 5, line 23, new words from the original version, as a loan that is not eligible for repayment. This addition allows professionals who have refinanced eligible education loans solely with other eligible education loans. So professionals who may refinance eligible loans with non-eligible loans, example, like a mortgage, may not choose that loan repayment track but may participate in the direct incentive track. Page 6, line 22, there is a...
Mr. Perrin, could you hold for just a moment? Representative Dugan, did you have a question?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Representative
Madam Chair, the third change was page 6, line 22, and we just added one word, and that's SCORE, S-C-O-R-E. This more clearly allows the commissioner to use the needs assessment score assigned in the site eligibility determination process in the subsequent prioritization of eligible sites. And then the last one, page 7, line 19, replace certified with advanced. And it's a technical change that corrects the profession name to advanced nurse practitioner, as defined in 08.68.850. Those are the only changes.
Is the objection maintained for the adoption of the CS? Seeing no objection. Representative Edgman.
I'd like to remove my objections.
Thank you.
Trying to get the same place. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Seeing no objection, the CS is adopted. With that, with the will of the committee, I'd like to move into public testimony. First, we'll go to the Fairbanks. I'm not sure if it's LAO. Margaret Soden from the Alaska Pharmacists Association. Margaret, are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. I'm Margaret Soden, president of the Alaska Pharmacists Association, and we strongly support House Bill 78 because our association is currently working really hard to encourage Alaska students to choose pharmacy as a career. And they can do some of their pre-pharmacy studies at our local universities, but there's no pharmacy school in Alaska, so they must go outside for an additional 3 to 6 years to complete their program. And as you all know, the cost of tuition and everything in colleges is keeps going up, and this can give students a real expensive education. And we're hoping that by providing these loan repayments and incentives that we can entice those new pharmacists to return to Alaska to practice here, and we would appreciate your support for this bill. Thank you very much.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for testifying today, Margaret.
Thank you.
Off net, we have Rhonda Snyder. Rhonda, are you there?
Sound Health Corporation in Nome, Alaska. We're across the Bering Sea from Russia. Our location is one that limits transportation out of the area. We are not on a road system. And so I would like to speak today in support of the incentive portion of this bill. I believe that as a recruitment and a retention tool for providers to come to our area to provide services, having an incentive that would enable them to go back to visit family members would definitely be something that would help us with retention. And I would ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Rhonda. Are there questions from committee members? Have a great day. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Nancy Davis. Nancy, are you online?
I'm online. Anna, this is Nancy Davis. I'm the executive director for the Alaska Pharmacists Association. Do you want me to go ahead?
Please.
Okay. Well, I'll reiterate what Margaret said, and I'll try to add a few more comments. And I did send a letter of support to the three members of the House Finance Committee in addition to the public testimony. There are no public programs active in this state to recruit and retain pharmacists. Alaska is unique in the fact that Alaska is only one of three states that doesn't have a pharmacy school. So we have a revolving door where we, you know, quite often have pharmacists coming out to Alaska to practice, and then they end up leaving the state for various reasons. We do lack a ready pipeline of pharmacists to work in our state. Recruitment is the only method to obtain the pharmacists we need. And I'd like to say that pharmacists are a part of the healthcare team. They're highly educated. They require a PharmD program. Pharmacists improve patient care. Chronic diseases cost the health system about 75 cents on every healthcare dollar spent. And inappropriate use of medications leads to adverse events, costing the healthcare system $177 billion each year. And as you know, we have an aging population, and the Medicare population has an average of about 12 medications, and so pharmacists are going to be a very important part of the team to make sure that there are not adverse drug events, and that keeps the individuals out of the hospital. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Is it snowing at home?
It stopped snowing.
Great.
So what?
Have a great day, Nancy, an Eagle River resident for the committee.
Thank you.
Thanks. Next on OffNet, Ian Elrich from the Manelic Association.
Hello?
Ian, welcome.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi, my name is Ian Ehrlich, President and CEO for Manelic Association in Kotzebue, Alaska. Manelic Association supports Hospital 78, but would like to make a comment or two regarding some of the specifics. Under the funding, there's an in-cash or an employer match, and we would just be curious to get the specifics on how they come up with the 0 and 50% employer match. But, you know, all being said, we're not overly concerned because overall, as more providers come to the state of Alaska, it also helps us as they move on and perhaps enjoy the state. That makes our recruiting easier as well. But I think as an association, we would like to participate in this process even with the employer match, just because the shortage that we face right now and the difficulty with filling these hard-to-fill positions is that important to the quality of our care. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Ian, if you contact Representative Heron's office, this bill is not moving today. Let me see if there's questions from committee members. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell me how many doctors that you require and how many you currently have?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Representative Tammy Wilson will repeat the question. Just a moment.
You were talking about a shortage, and I'm just trying to get an idea of where you are. Could you just tell me how many doctors you require or you'd like to have and how many you currently do have?
Yeah, we would like to have about 15 full-time positions, and between the use of TDYs and permanent positions, we're at around 13 right now.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying, Ian. I'm not sure who just passed me this note. Representative Heron, would you like to speak to what you passed me, or would you like me to repeat it?
Madam Chair, to an earlier question about priority, is that We took a look at the bill, and maybe it could be appropriately placed on page 2, maybe in the area of first part of page 2, is a priority for those who serve as primary care medical providers. But, yes, we could draft in a priority for that as well.
Thank you, Representative Heron. Ian, thank you for being online. If you would like to continue to stay online, we'll get to the conversation of the bill after the public hearing closes. But the bill is not moving today from committee, so we'll have an opportunity, as Representative Heron suggested, to entertain an amendment about primary care providers and have a conversation about business match or the company match. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Chair, can I ask a question?
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. To the representative from Manelik, this is Representative Les Guerra. And is your shortage in the area of primary care?
We have general family practitioners, but it is primary care.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Guerra. Next, off net, Emily Hughes. Emily, are you with us?
Hi.
Hello. We can hear you. Thank you.
Okay. Hi. I am a student, and I'm actually going to school out of state. I'm a pre-med student applying to medical school this next year. And I very much support Hospital 78. Myself coming back from medical school, I know I'm going to be in quite a bit of debt, and an incentive to come back to Alaska would be very helpful, although I'd love to come back to Alaska to practice. I'll have to be honest with myself. If I can't afford it, I won't be able to come back. So, I just really support 78.
Emily, thank you for your service in going into the medical profession. I know that requires a lot of commitment of time as well as resources. We appreciate your testimony. Are there questions from committee members? Best wishes for finals, if that's where you're at.
All right, yes, thank you very much.
Going out to Unalaska, Sonia Combe, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you. My name is Sonia Hansforth Combe. I'm the executive director of the Aluluk Family and Health Services Clinic in Unalaska. I'm also the president of the Alaska Primary Care Association. And I am testifying strongly in support of House Bill 78. Unalaska's experience currently, Aluluk's experience, is that we are a primary care facility. We're the only source of medical, comprehensive medical care in our region. So we do emergency services as well as primary care. We have, of the positions that are covered by this bill, we have 15 of those professional positions, including RNs, counselors, dentists, physicians and physician assistants, and 5 of those positions are currently open. One of them, an RN position, we've been recruiting for more than a year. The other ones for more than 6 months. This bill would really help us, and I'm in support of it. Thank you.
Thank you for testifying. There is a question. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a quick comment in regards to thanking Sonia for her service at the clinic there in Alaska. It's my understanding that she is moving on as executive director, and also to thank her service with the Primary Care Association and for her advocacy on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Edgman.
Thank you.
Moving off net, Elizabeth Ripley. Elizabeth, are you with us today?
Yes, hi, this is Elizabeth.
If you could identify yourself for the record and proceed to your testimony.
My name is Elizabeth Ripley. I'm the executive director of the Mattsu Health Foundation in Wasilla, Alaska. The Mattsu Health Foundation is a 501c3 that shares ownership in the Mattsu Regional Medical Center, which is the primary and sole community acute provider for the Mattsu region. Ideally, we want to help our patients stay well and out of the acute care settings. And to do this, we need a quality healthcare workforce in these primary care settings across the state, from the urban to the rural regions. And I provided some written testimony which documents how Mattsu Regional and our other acute care providers are in a position to do a lot of this this quality recruitment. But it's but you're hearing from a number of different people across the state that it's much more challenging in these rural regions. And it's in the primary care setting where chronic disease management keeps people out of the hospital. It's in these primary care settings where people learn how to take care of themselves and take preventive measures. And it's in these settings where people access care for an illness before it becomes acute and emergent in nature. If Alaskans don't have access to care at this level because there is no provider in the clinic, then they tend to use more costly services at the other end of the spectrum. If we want to reduce the rate of Medicaid cost growth, then we need to go upstream. And House Bill 78 goes upstream. I commend you for closely watching the state budget and looking critically at state spending. An investment in a loan repayment and direct incentive program is just that, an investment. And its return can be found in reduced hospitalizations and a healthier Alaska. The Matthew Health Foundation urges you to support and facilitate the passage of House Bill 78. Thank you.
Thank you for testifying, Elizabeth. Are there questions from committee members? Have a great afternoon, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Next in Anchorage, we have Mary Sullivan. Mary, are you with us?
Hear me? Can you hear me? I'm here.
We can. Your testimony, please.
Hi, my name's Mary Sullivan for the record, and I'm with the Alaska Primary Care Association. I'm also a current student in the MSW program at UAA, and will be graduating with some debt, although I did work full-time going all the way through my program. House Bill 78 would really help out folks in my kind of position to stay in Alaska and provide services in Alaska in those areas where there are shortages, and I encourage you to pass it today. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Mary, thank you for joining us in Anchorage. Also in Anchorage, Elizabeth Serlis. And if I've said it wrong, please restate your name correctly for the record.
Certainly, thank you. My name is Elizabeth Searles. I'm the director of the School of Social Work at the University of Alaska in Anchorage, and I have been on the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority's workforce focus group for several years now. There have been a number of documented vacancy studies, Department of Labor data that have supported what Representative Heron has said about serious workforce shortages in all of the disciplines listed in House Bill 78. I urge your support for this bill. Please support it because this will enhance our health and our behavioral health providers' ability to recruit and retain healthcare professionals in Alaska. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Elizabeth. Is there anyone else online that we haven't identified that wishes to testify on HB 78? Seeing none, we'll move to Juneau. Karen Perdue. Welcome, Karen.
For the record, my name is Karen Perdue. I'm Executive Director, CEO President of Alaska Hospital Nursing Home Association. We represent both urban and rural hospitals in Alaska. We support this bill. Our rural hospitals in particular struggle to assist their communities in recruiting providers of all kinds, physicians particularly. And I would just like to make a comment to the amendment, which I certainly don't have any concern about promoting primary care providers and recruitment, but there are also severe shortages in other professions such as surgery, internal medicine, anesthesiology, any kind of service that a local, relatively medium-sized community could get that would add a service to their community would be very valuable, and sometimes those are as underserved as primary care. So I just leave that thought with you. But we do support the bill, and we do support this effort.
Questions from committee members. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Karen, and welcome to Juneau. And I think this is the first time I've seen you in your new position. There's different methods of delivery that we have in Alaska. There's the urban hospital structure, and then there's the regional healthcare concept. I think it's practiced pretty successfully in some places. Is this bill neutral to that? Is it blind to how we need them? Does it just address that there's a shortage?
Well, I think the bill has evolved to try to target the greatest area of need, and you know, whether that's the population that's being served or the ruralness. So it has some flexibility, I think, for making service available to urban settings where there are a really strategic need. But frankly, you know, urban hospitals can somewhat do some of this for themselves. So I think the bill does a nice job of targeting where the need is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Just for the record, and those listening outside of Juneau, we have been joined by Representative Jewell. Welcome. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Madam Chair, and I certainly think that the sponsor's input on whether we take an amendment is very important. So, but the draft amendment that's been passed around, obviously there's a big shortage in primary care, probably the biggest shortage in primary care. There is a shortage across the board in many other areas too. And one way to deal with a shortage is you deal with the biggest problem first, primary care, and and then when there's money left over, you deal with the others. The other way to do it would be to deal partially with the primary care shortage and then partially with the shortage here and then partially with the shortage there. And that's why the draft amendment has been written to give a priority for primary care with leftover funds then obviously to go to the other areas. But you want to, I think, from what I've heard in committee testimony, you'd want to solve the primary care problem first. And with other funds, then solve the others too. So the amendment wouldn't prevent the solving of those problems too. The priority would be primary care first. And I don't know how you feel about that.
Through the chair, I think that if you really want to know my feeling, I think the sites are really good at prioritizing what they need. If they need primary care, they're going to go get it, and they'll prioritize that. I'm concerned that we wouldn't have anything left over to see these other specialty areas get some service. But I will say that I haven't thought a great deal about the amendment, so I want to leave it at that.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Guerra. Thank you for your testimony, Karen. Shelley Hughes, followed by Pat Carr. Welcome.
Thank you. Shelley Hughes from Palmer, Alaska, and I'm here as a healthcare consumer and also a representative of Alaska Primary Care Association. As a healthcare consumer in Mat-Su, it took me 8 months to get an internal medicine physician through an application process, and that is a primary care provider, I might mention. And as a representative of 142 primary care clinics across the state, both urban and rural, I can tell you that this is an important bill. I was in on the ground level facilitating the work group that developed this and worked with the research as far as putting this proposal together. And one of the things that our clinics we hear is that they're losing candidates to other states. They think they have somebody lined up, and then they find out they're losing them to someone, another state that offers something. So from that end, and also it is something that the marketplace isn't fixing right now, but yet this would employ a marketplace mechanism, so I do think it is appropriate role of the government and to help alleviate the shortage. And in closing, as we did research this was the most cost-effective results producing of all the options out there. Every penny spent is tied to a practitioner actually seeing a patient. So. It's a good return on investment. And with that, I'll close. Thank you.
Questions from committee members? Thank you for joining us and waiting today, Shelley. Pat Carr? Followed by Marie Darling.
afternoon, Representative Faircloth, other members of the committee. I'm Pat Carr. I'm Program Manager for Health Planning and Systems Development within the Department of Health and Social Services. I've been several, at least, allusions to questions for me, so I signed up to respond to questions, so Madam Chair, I'll pause at that and see if there are questions of me.
Representative Wilson, you had a question for Ms. Carr. Did you want to ask it now, or?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just, and maybe I already got answered by the last one. Was there a model out there that you were taking this, or did you just take it from a lot of different programs currently?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, the working group, as Ms. Hughes alluded, the work, and several others have alluded to, the working group that did considerable research across the country, looking at various states and the models that are in those states, to put together a package that seems, or a proposal that seemed to match up with the needs of what Alaska is experiencing.
Representative Wilson, follow up.
And so we have a amendment before us. Has any of the states done something where they, like this one, where it would make a priority of one particular physician over others, or are most of the decisions made within each area?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, maybe I could refer you or remind the committee also, or inform you, I think many of you are aware of this, that HRSA, the Health Resources and Services Administration, runs several loan repayment types of programs. One, the National Health Service Corps has loan repayment, and also there's the state loan repayment grant program where funds come to the state and the states administer the program, which is what we're doing. We have that now, and we also work with National Health Service Corps. In those, there are priorities set on particular types of providers, and the definition of what primary care is that is used by HRSA is a very broad definition that includes behavioral health and oral health as well. And the emphasis on physicians within those programs is internal medicine, family medicine, family practice physicians, OBGYNs are in that, on some of those categories as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Good timing on my sneeze, I got right to. Ms. Carr, thank you for the work you did on this. I know rendering a process down into a succinct document is a lot of work. The amendment that we have before us talks about primary care medical providers. What is the definition? How many different categories of doctors, if you're the right one to ask this question? Are there GPs and...
Representative Gutenberg, through the chair, that's part of what I was beginning to explain in my previous comments to Representative Wilson's question, is that it depends on who you go to define that, but I think that most often, many times what is used is the definition by HRSA of including within primary care not only the certain categories of physicians, but also categories of like dentists, and behavioral health providers such as psychiatrists, and certain types of clinical psychologists. And some states then do pick up and add other categories of providers that they consider under that umbrella or needs that they add to their definition of primary care. So part of it depends on who's defined and whose definition of primary care you look to.
Okay, if I can
follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you the person that we need to talk to about the bill and how it's activated and functions, or is there somebody from law or?
Representative Guttenberg, if we could wait until we finish public testimony on that, we can get into the bill. If there was a specific question for Ms. Carr, then I was going to allow that right now.
No, that's fine.
Thank you so much. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Obviously, one of the emphases, what's the plural for emphasis?
Emphases.
Emphases.
One of the things we want to do is make sure that we have enough primary care providers. Is there something in the bill, the way the bill reads now, that would give us some sort of priority towards primary care providers, or if we wanted to have some sort of priority or percentage dedicated to primary care providers, would that have to be done through an amendment to the bill?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, with the needs criteria that are set and allowed of doing a needs assessment of the sites and of the state would be one area where some of the shortage of needs would show up, and primary care would show up as a priority there. There would be others that may show up as well. I think through the needs criteria allows that analysis and then the priority setting that would then arise out of, for looking at the very hard to fill, the regular and very hard to fill, as well as using the needs criteria, I think, and setting the priorities, that using the prioritization scheme, I think you have some of that in this bill already, or Representative Heron has that in the bill already.
Thank you.
And whether the committee feels there's a need to emphasize that more, I think that's up to the committee and the sponsor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Marie Darling. Darling. Followed by Delisa Culpepper. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you. My name is Marie Darling, and I'm here representing AARP. And you have our letter of support for this bill. And actually, AARP approaches this bill from the standpoint of the customer. And our members are the group most likely to need the health services, and often the first ones who are going to face critical health problems because they cannot find a provider. And as you know, prior to 1990 or even before that, many older Alaskans left the state because they could not find medical facilities or providers to meet those needs. However, Alaska now has the highest percentage of older people who decide to stay in their home state after retirement. And the economic value of these retirees is estimated at over $1.7 billion. And we just want to emphasize that so that you can see if our members cannot find a health provider, Alaska will be the loser. And we hope that you want our citizens to stay here after retirement. And the most significant determination of where retirees decide to live is the availability of health care. So we must have an adequate workforce to do this if we're going to keep older Alaskans in our state. And this bill will go a long way towards helping to do that. So therefore, we fully support the bill.
Thank you, Marie. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for joining us in House Finance today.
Thank you.
Delise Culpepper, followed by Kate Burkhart.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Delisa Culpepper. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The trust has been involved in loan repayment programs for the last 4 years, the last two of which we've acted as matching funds for the state loan repayment program from the National Health Services Corps. We found it to be very effective. There are extreme behavioral health shortages. In fact, the first round and our last one so far for the SHARP program that Pat referred to, close to half of the applicants and recipients were for behavioral health positions, psychiatrists and clinical social workers and others. There are real shortages in the rural areas, and they have positions that are open for long periods of time. So we're very interested in helping to fill those. The trust, though, as you know, has not just traditional behavioral health, but our beneficiaries in DD and Alzheimer's and others are large consumers of primary care. And so we are very interested in making sure that there is access to primary care and to behavioral health services across the state, and have seen that it is effective in our 4 years that we have been using and investing our money in loan repayment. So.
Thank you. Representative Guerra has a question.
I have a question. I don't know if you're the right person for it. It might be Representative Heron or Liz. Does the loan repayment and financial assistance in this bill only apply to medical providers who work for a nonprofit clinic? Or does it also apply to, you know, your big doctor's office down the street that's a for-profit doctor's office?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, I would need to clarify, but I will tell you the current one that we run, and I think, you know, it's modeled much after this, would only allow for nonprofit, that it does not allow the current one for, because it's tied to federal money, it's tied to federal HPSIS, and those are not private operations for medical providers, that they are public clinics and tribal health entities and others that are 501c3s or other things. I would need to have you, though, ask the sponsor of Pat Carr if this bill would allow for things. I think the prioritization of, you know, high vacancy rates for in priority areas may not allow for that, but I'm not certain.
Representative Guerra, follow up.
Thank you. No, Madam Chair, I would like an answer to that question, because I think if that answer is correct, I think, and I don't have any intention of offering this amendment today, I would want to work with the sponsor to see what the sponsor would like, but if this is indeed, if that answer is indeed correct, actually, I think the amendment, no amendment may be needed, so.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Thank you, Ms. Culpepper. Kate Burkhardt? Followed by Denise Dinello.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kate Burkhardt, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And my standard disclaimer, my comments are on behalf of my boards and not any other entity. The Alaska Mental Health Board and Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse are strong supporters of the bill. Its inclusion of licensed clinical social workers, psychologists, and psychiatrists address a critical shortage in the healthcare workforce that addresses the behavioral health needs of Alaskans. That was going to be the end of my comments, but given the conversation around an amendment to create a statutory priority for primary care providers, I just would point out that the vacancy rates and the workforce shortage for behavioral health providers is equally grave. We hear of community mental health centers and hospitals that wait a year, much like the executive director of Alelic spoke about for her nurse position to fill a psychiatrist position. Often these community mental health centers have to rely on locum tenens, positions which are more expensive and provide good quality care, but there's a lack of consistency because it's a different doctor rolling in and out, so patients don't get the same kind of care that they would get from the last resident doctor. So if there is an amendment, we would hope that it embraces a broad definition, much like the HRSA definition Ms. Carr referenced. And I would point out that in addition to the needs assessment included in the bill, there is an advisory body. It's referenced in paragraph C on page 2. To help provide recommendations for oversight and evaluation of the program. And that advisory body is composed of individuals who are members with healthcare expertise, including expertise in economic issues affecting the hiring and retention of healthcare professionals. And so, since this is a statute that will last a long time and the healthcare workforce needs will change over time, that's a mechanism for ensuring priorities stay relevant without creating a statutory priority for one kind of health care.
Other questions from committee members? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Thank you,
Ms. Burkhardt.
Ms. Burkhardt. Is there a subspecialty or an additional training that's needed for behavioral health specialists to do their work using telemedicine?
There are training programs. I think it depends on whether you're a psychiatrist or you are a psychologist or a behavioral health aide having to help facilitate that connection between someone in your rural clinic and the psychiatrist at Mount Edgecombe or API or ANMC. So it just depends. Our state is more reliant on that service delivery system than many others. It's not a regular part of formal training. My understanding from conversations with Ron Adler, the director at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, is that they, for their new doctors and providers, you know, provide that support to get them used to serving people through the TV.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Denise Danilo? And if I've not read your handwriting correctly on your last name, I apologize. Please help me out.
Good afternoon. My name is Denise Daniello for the Alaska Commission on Aging, and I'm here on behalf of the commission to testify on House Bill 78. As you know, Alaska continues to lead all states in the growth of the senior population, people aged 65 years and older. Not only are Alaska seniors living longer, but many have chronic mental health medical conditions as well as disabilities where they require more physical care. We have a number of healthcare professionals who are preparing to retire, so that's contributing to a shortage of healthcare workers that this bill attempts to address. Recently, our commission conducted a statewide survey of seniors as part of developing an assessment of needs for the Alaska State Plan for Senior Services. It's the new four-year comprehensive plan that we prepare on behalf of the Department of Health and Social Services to satisfy federal requirements for the state to receive federal funds for senior programs. And we found that health care was identified as the number one concern of seniors who responded to the survey. And we had more than 3,000 people aged 50 years and older who responded, of whom 2,395 were people aged 65 years and older. We found that 31% of the people 65 and older said that they had problems finding a primary care provider in the community where they lived. Part of this problem, 19%, had to do with the fact that they couldn't find a primary care provider who would accept Medicare reimbursement, so there's the Medicare reimbursement issue. But also 10% said they couldn't find a doctor because they weren't enough in their town. So in looking at this issue by region, we found that it was most common in Anchorage, where one out of four seniors who responded to the survey indicated this problem of access to primary care. But we also heard from seniors who live in Fairbanks, South Central, and the Aleutians who had this problem, too, of accessing care. We received 173 open-ended comments about this issue of primary care access for seniors. In fact, it was the hottest topic our survey received. We received, sadly, a number of comments from seniors who said that because they weren't able to find a primary care doctor, that they would be prepared to leave the state. So that was sad news. We are in support, the commission supports House Bill 78. We see that access to primary care is a growing problem for seniors. It was something that was identified back in 2005 when we did a similar survey of seniors, when 24% of seniors who responded to the survey at that time indicated this was a problem for them. So we really appreciate your consideration of this bill and encourage you to support it. Thank you.
Questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Denise. David Morgan? Welcome.
Hi. My name is Dave Morgan. I work for an organization, South Central Foundation, that manages McGrath and Nelavina Community Health Centers. But before that, for 6 years, I was operations director for seven clinics in the Aleutians, Eastern Aleutian Tribes, and a current member of the Alaska Healthcare Commission. Though I'm not here speaking on that, I was given permission to leave the meeting to come up. I'll do this in 28 seconds. Basically, in my 30 years of working in healthcare in Alaska, the most bang for the buck to improve workforce, and especially this bill, which not only provides physicians, primary care physicians, mid-levels, PAs, anyone working mid-level areas that we have workforce problems, this, from my experience with the National Health Corps and the Indian Health Service that have the same programs, gets the most, the quickest, and the fastest, and you keep them longer. Most states have this. We're competing. It's almost sort of nuclear arms. If you want to recruit them, you got to do it this way and that way. But I'm a firm believer that this would work and be the most effective to do it. And that was 25 seconds.
Yes. No questions?
Questions? And my understanding is it would, and I could be wrong, but from my reading of the bill, you do not have to work for a nonprofit. That it could be for other modalities of arrangement or private practice or that type of thing.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Representative Guerra has a question.
Mr. Morgan, that was 68 seconds, which kept you a lot closer to your promise than we actually ever get to.
Well, it took me 20 seconds with my hip to get up to the podium. I'm not counting that time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Back in Anchorage's LIO, Joan Diamond, are you there?
Thank you. My name is Joan Diamond. I am here representing myself. I am retired after 28 years from public health, and I am in support of House Bill 78 and the reimbursement. You know, I have a list, as I listen, there's a number of places that I see myself I will be in Medicare soon and will need a primary provider that will see me. I also will have a daughter who's finishing her master's in psych mental health and will be available to work, has taken loans, and would love to return to Alaska. And this is a child born and raised and a chance to give back. We talk about the brain drain, and we talk about the young people who go out and never come back. And when we listen to where the guests are, I can't be more in favor of what this is and in hopes of as a parent, providing a great contribution to the medical community and needs that we will be having in the next 20 years. Thank you.
Ms. Diamond, thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from committee members? Have a great day in Anchorage. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Any others that wish to testify here in Juneau? If you'd come forward and state your name for the record.
Here.
Yes, please.
My name is Jeff LePage, L-E-P-A-G-E. I'm a physical therapist. I've been in the state of Alaska practicing physical therapy since 2003. I'm currently the president of the state.
Recording stopped.
I'm sorry, Jeff, please go ahead.
Currently the president of the Alaska chapter of the American Physical Therapy Association. I'd just like to testify, that's the term, that physical therapists in the state are in support of this bill. As a not only a physical therapist, and I know a lot of the therapists in the state it's just difficult. This is one of the fields that's difficult to recruit for. And additionally, as a small business owner, I've gone through great lengths to try to recruit physical therapists for my own practice. We heartily support this bill.
Jeff, thank you for waiting and testifying today. Is there anyone else here in Juneau or online that would like to testify on HB 78? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heron.
Just to respond to Representative Guerra, and we spoke to his last question about, you know, profit, nonprofit. The qualified answer is that anybody that provides services can, you know, seek this out. The key phrase is the most important aspect is the underserved goes first. That's the key phrase of this.
Representative Guerra.
Madam Chair.
Briefly, please.
Sure. I think, I have comfort with the bill, and I also would have comfort just working with the sponsor if there are any changes between here and the floor. So I certainly don't need to do any amendments in this committee.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point to make out to the bill sponsor. Realizing that the bill is going to come back, and something that may not be warranted, but I'll bring it to his attention anyway, and that is that on page 2, in terms of the composition of the advisory body, I noticed back at page one that there's a particular reference to rural Alaska, residents of rural Alaska, but just something to think about, that maybe rural Alaska should be considered in terms of the makeup of the advisory committee somewhere, that we have, you know, at least one or two members from rural Alaska, put that into the bill. So I'll just point that out for later consideration.
Thank you, Representative Ashman. It's my request of the committee that you review the fiscal notes. There are two of them to date. We have a new CS in front of us. We have had a piece of paper that passed around as a proposed amendment. That amendment is not being offered at this time. So if there is an amendment that you would like considered, please speak with Representative Heron directly. And with that, we will move on our agenda to HB 103. Thank you, Representative Heron. Power Project with the Alaska Energy Authority. Are there questions from committee members prior to taking up the power project?
Madam Chair, I guess there are, just like, given the pace and the time, do we plan on getting through all of these bills today, or if not, should we release people waiting for?
Representative Garrett, we're planning on getting through the bills that we have on the agenda today. That's the anticipated outcome. For the record, if you'd identify yourselves and present the bill before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher-Goad. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority.
And for the record, I am Brian Bjorkquist. I'm the Senior Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law.
Also online with the Alaska Energy Authority to answer questions is Brian Carey. He is our large hydro project manager. Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee for scheduling and hearing House Bill 103. House Bill 103 was introduced at the request of the governor. And the reason for the introduction of House Bill 103 is there is a goal that was passed by the legislature last year to have 50% of renewable power for electricity by 2025. In order to reach this, a large hydro project is considered critical to this effort. This past year and in November, the Alaska Energy Authority released a preliminary decision document that identifies that the Susitna-Lowatana project is a preferred and recommended project to move forward with to develop this. Besides the legislation of House Bill 103, there's also a capital request for us to pursue the permitting and licensing process for this project, and that would be financed through the Railroad Energy Fund. The additional step that needs to happen for us to move forward with a large hydro project is to enable the Alaska Energy Authority to construct and own new projects. House Bill 103, the energy version, the committee substitute from the Energy Committee version before you, authorizes the Alaska Energy Authority to construct and own new projects. And this, again, will allow AEA to file the preliminary permit application with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The legislation also allows AEA to hire employees, and it allows AEA to create subsidiaries to own and construct new projects. It also creates a new Alaska Railbelt Energy Fund and repeals the existing Railbelt Energy Fund. There was no easy way to have a transfer of the Railbelt Energy Fund to an AEA energy fund, so we had to go through a process of repealing and developing an Alaska Railbelt Energy Fund in AEA statutes. There is also one additional change to the legislation, which defines the Board of Directors quorum as 4 of 7 members. Last year, the legislature passed legislation that restructured the AIDA board, which also restructured the AEA board, to be 5 public members and 2 commissioners. There was a specific statute in AEA statutes that defined the quorum as 3, and this there is a provision to correct this. I wanted to provide a little bit of background and some AEA history on why this legislation is needed. In 1976, the Alaska Energy Authority, or at the time was called the Alaska Power Authority, was created by the legislature. And the mission is to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska.
The enabling legislation in 1976 specifically states that it was to reduce consumer power costs and otherwise encourage long-term economic growth of the state, including the development of natural resources through the establishment of power projects. In the 1980s, the Alaska Energy Authority developed several projects. The Fort M. Pool projects were developed and owned by the Alaska Energy Authority, the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, the Alaska Intertie, and then also the a smaller project on Kodiak Island, the Larsen Bay Hydroelectric Project. And also at that time, the first attempt to develop the Susitna Hydroelectric Project was considered. In 1993, there was a reorganization effort of which the Alaska Energy Authority was had powers to construct and own new projects and to hire employees removed from its authorities. The ADA board members became the AEA board. ADA staff provided support and management of AEA programs. And at that time also, the structure of AEA changed a bit, of which there was a relationship with the utilities, of which the projects that we owned were established as being managed with maximum utility control. The Fort M. Pool was actually divested and was sold to the local utilities, and the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project is managed with a management committee that is made up of the rebel utilities that receive power from that project. In 1999, the Department of Community and Regional Affairs was repealed in statute, and former AEA programs were then reestablished into the Alaska Energy Authority. Those were a lot of our grant programs, and most of the programs that were considered our rural energy programs became once again AEA programs. Most in the early 2000s, most of AEA's work was truly in the rural energy construction projects. We constructed a lot of rural energy infrastructure from financing from the Denali Commission. In 2008, the ADA and AEA boards made bylaw changes to allow an AEA executive director to be hired that was different than the ADA executive director. As the AEA executive director, I'm appointed by the AEA board, and the ADA board actually hires me, distinct person, of course, from the ADA executive director. And in 2008, the Renewable Energy Fund was established, and in 2010, the Emerging Energy Technology Fund was established. And in just this earlier this year, the governor's report that was required under the Senate Bill 220, the Sustainable Energy Act from last year, identified AEA's key role in planning energy infrastructure and financing projects. So through that natural progression, essentially since 1999, when those rural programs were reestablished into the Alaska Energy Authority, we're at the point now where House Bill 103 and its companion bill, Senate Bill 42, were introduced to further reestablish and recognize in statute AEA's role in energy project and program development. So again, the legislation allows us to construct and own new projects. It was a power that was in AEA's powers prior to 1993 and allows us to hire staff. Now, hiring the staff is really there. Over 40 people identified as ADA employees now, that the intent is to transfer those ADA employees to AEA to be known as AEA employees. It would, again, require or allow us to establish subsidiary corporations, and also develop an Alaska Railroad Energy Fund. The changes in the House Energy Committee included removing, there was a provision to allow AEA to adopt its own procurement regulations. We've chosen not to move forward with that at this time. That was originally a process that we thought it would be appropriate to take the several different ways that AEA has to procure services and have one consolidated regulatory process to do that. I think it would be a good change. There were some issues that came up with respect to There was, I think, some confusion with respect to how and why we would do that, and it was getting wrapped up into us pursuing the Susitna project, and so we were requested and suggested that be removed from the legislation. It also requires a legislative appropriation from the new Alaska Rural Energy Fund. The original legislation had the legislature appropriating money in the fund and AEA having the ability to use the money without further legislative appropriation. And that further restriction of legislative appropriation outside of the fund was provided as an amendment in House Energy. And there were some minor technical corrections to the legislation. The House Energy Committee had 7 hearings, and also the committee did pass the legislation with 7 due pass recommendations. At this time, Madam Chair, Brian Bjorkvist is here to run through the sectional analysis for the committee, and I'm able to walk through the fiscal notes with the committee, and Brian Carey, again, is online to answer questions.
What's the wish of the committee? Would you like the sectional walkthrough?
Yes, ma'am.
Brian, please continue.
Thank you. For the record, I am Brian Bjorkvist. I'm the Senior Assistant Attorney General of the Department of Law. Section 1 deals with the existing Rail Belt Energy Fund. The amendment on page 1 is a technical amendment to capitalize the department. The amendment on page 2 will...
If you could stop for a moment. I don't know what you mean when you're saying amendment.
Okay.
All right. Are you meaning how it was amended in the Energy Committee?
Yeah, Madam Chair, the change in Section 1, the amendment to the existing legislation. On page 1...
You need to back up. We don't have any amendments in front of us, and so let's just hold for one moment. Representative Dugan?
Madam Chair, are you talking about the committee substitute for House Bill 103 Energy? Is that the place where we should be looking here?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Dugan, yes, and let me clarify what I'm trying to testify.
Thank you, Brian. Representative Wilson, could we move the Energy Committee sub-CS before us?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move CS for House Bill Number 103, Energy 27-GH1822-B.
We have an objection.
I object.
Thanks. We have the CS for the House Bill 103, Energy before us, and now you're going to give us a sectional on how that's changed from the original introduction?
Madam Chair, if that's the pleasure of the committee, I can, or I can just go through section by section what this version of the bill does, whatever the pleasure of the committee is.
Brian, a sectional analysis would be great on the CS, and for us, amendments mean we're looking for something else to place into the bill that's before us, and so it's probably difference of opinion from a policymaker to someone who has to put that document together, so...
Thank
Please
you, Madam
proceed
Chair.
With your sectional.
In Section 1, the change to the existing statute dealing with the Rail Belt Energy Fund on page 1 is just a technical amendment to capitalize the department. The change made on page 2 to that same Section 2 would authorize that the money in that fund to be used to capitalize the new Alaska Rail Belt Energy Fund, which will be enacted in Section 3 of the bill. This amendment would not move any money. That would require an appropriation to do so, but this would just authorize that to happen. Section 2 of the bill would place into the exempt service the executive director and other staff of the Alaska Energy Authority. Section 3 of the bill would create the new Alaska Rail Belt Energy Fund, which ultimately would replace the existing Rail Belt Energy Fund through a repeal process, which I will discuss when we get to Section 12. Section 4 of the bill is the technical correction dealing with the quorum of the Alaska Energy Authority Board. With the legislation increasing the size of the AETA board last year, the AEA board also increased. This would increase from 3 to 4 the quorum for what is now a 7-person board. Section 5 of the bill would authorize AETA to have staff, including an executive director. This authority is comparable to the authority that the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority has to have staff. Section 6 of the bill would amend the powers of the Alaska Energy Authority.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Brian, I think you might have misspoken or maybe I misheard you, but Section 5 allows AEA to appoint persons as staff. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, that is correct. The authority that would be given to the Alaska Energy Authority would be comparable to the authority the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority has for its own staff.
While we're here, when you were talking about allowing the AEA employees or moving them into the exempt service, now that they're ADA employees, they're in the exempt service anyway. It's not like that would change. It's just exempt service within AEA as opposed to exempt service within ADA. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Representative Garrett, correct. The employees would retain the same status as exempt employees.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garrett. Brian, please continue.
Thank you. Section 6, again, deals with the powers of the Alaska Energy Authority. The amendment in subsection 6, page 3, lines 19 through 21, would specifically authorize the Alaska Energy Authority in issuing bonds to deal with new projects. The other amendments also deal with giving the Alaska Energy Authority the power to acquire and construct new projects. Those include the changes made on page 4, line 4, and page 4, line 16. And then on page 5, lines 5 through 8, they also give the Alaska Energy Authority power to construct or acquire new projects. And also under 7 and 8, line 7 and 8, to perform feasibility studies and engineering and design studies with respect to new power projects. Section 7 of the bill would allow Alaska Energy Authority to create subsidiaries for the purpose of a new constructing, financing, or acquiring power projects. What this section will allow AEA to do is to develop a power project through a subsidiary mechanism. That can help with financing of a power project. It can shield the Alaska Energy Authority from liabilities that might arise from a project. And in the future, when there are more than one power projects, if that occurs, it can shield one power project and the economics of it from the economics of a second power project. I will point out on line 17 of page 5, there will be an amendment that the Alaska Energy Authority will request. Right now it says, unless otherwise provided by the corporation, and there will be an amendment proposed to change that to authority. What that sentence says is that what's intended is AEA can choose under that whether the debts and liabilities of the subsidiary are going to be the debts and liabilities of the authority, and that's a technical correction or a substantive correction that legislative legal pointed out.
Representative Dugan.
Would it be appropriate to entertain questions on these points as we go through?
Absolutely. What I'd like to do is for the committee to have an understanding of the function of the bill, not necessarily debate the bill. So once we have that understanding, if we could move into public testimony, we have people waiting online. Representative Dugan.
No, I'm good. I just wanted to understand what we were doing. I don't have a question.
Okay. Brian, please continue.
Thank you. Section 8 of the bill would provide that the provisions of 4483090 will apply to a subsidiary corporation if it's created under the 085, which I just discussed under Section 7, for a power project. That statutory section deals with two different things. First, it mandates provisions that AEA must have in a power sales agreement, including certain obligations to review annually what is in the cost of the project, and that provides that the AEA in a power sales agreement will have a cost-based pricing without any profit to AEA. It also provides for exemption from the regulatory jurisdiction from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And this provision would provide that if a project is developed within a subsidiary, it would have that same power or exemption from jurisdiction from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Section 9 of the bill is an amendment to 4483-396 to add that that section will apply to power project developed under the new statutory authority to do new power projects. That statute currently only applies to the former energy program for Alaska, which is projects that were developed before 1993 when the Alaska Energy Authority's authority for acquiring and constructing projects was taken away. And so what Section 396 does, it deals also with how the Alaska Energy Authority is to manage a project. Under subsection A, it provides that AEA owns and administers the project. There are several subsections that deal with how the operation and maintenance is to happen, is to occur, and it provides that AEA is to contract with utilities for the operation and maintenance. There's also a subsection that deals with AEA oversight over a project, including reviewing the budget, reviewing the economics of the operation, and ensuring that the project is operated to national standards. And so this section will have that apply to new projects in addition to the former or the old projects under the former energy program for Alaska. Section 10 provides that same section 396, it will be applicable to a subsidiary if AEA chooses to develop a power project within a subsidiary rather than developing a power project on its own as the Alaska Energy Authority. Section 11 is an amendment to the definition of feasibility study, and it deletes that the feasibility study only applies to projects that are part of the former energy program for Alaska, so we'll pick up the new power projects as well. And just a comment on this, some of the public testimony has suggested that the statutory definition for a feasibility study should go back to the language that existed before 1993 and have very, very detailed provisions dealing with what needs to be included within a feasibility study. In reviewing the statute and the regulations that existed at that time, it's rather apparent that what the feasibility study statutory provisions, which were very detailed, dealing with all aspects of the development of a power project, were aimed at the FERC licensing process as it existed at that time. At that time, the basic licensing process, which is now called the traditional licensing process, had the developer of a power project do all the work necessary to prepare an application and then submit it to FERC with all of the analysis dealing with all aspects of the project from economic to the environmental, fish and wildlife, and all of the broad spectrum of issues that need to be dealt with by FERC. The licensing processes have changed since that time. There are now new processes which are generally and universally considered to be better, that have coordination between the applicant for a license, stakeholders and interested parties, resource agencies, and FERC, so that there's a collaborative process by which licenses are prepared before they're submitted to FERC as a license application. And reverting to the earlier statutory scheme where the AEA is required to provide all of this detailed information wouldn't really be as appropriate at this point with the new licensing processes in place. The other comment with respect to that is the Alaska Energy Authority is doing evaluation of projects differently than they did before. There have been appropriations, for example, for evaluating Wautana. That work is done through the appropriation process. AEA has also done integrated resource planning, so it's just a different type of process than existed before in 1993. Moving on, Section 12 of the bill, this would be the repealer of the existing Rail Belt Energy Fund. Section 13 of the bill is a transitional section dealing with employees of the Alaska Energy Authority and provides for ADA and AEA to jointly identify the employees that will be transferred from ADA to the Alaska Energy Authority, and that process needs to be completed by the end of this calendar year. Section 14 of the bill is instructions to the revisor of statutes just to add employees into the heading for 4483080, which would, with the amendment discussed earlier, give AEA the authority to have employees also. Section 15 provides for a contingent effective date of the repeal of the Rail Belt Energy Fund under Section 12. What it requires is that all the money in the existing fund be appropriated either to the new Rail Belt Energy Fund or appropriated and expended on other purposes, which include projects. What this provision will allow is that before the existing Rail Belt Energy Fund is repealed, that all the money that in there will have been moved to the new fund or expended, so that if there are any lapses with existing appropriations that have not yet been expended, that they would first be dealt with before the fund would be repealed. And then Section 16 is, other than that, Section 15, it provides for an immediate effective date.
Thank you, Brian. With that said, we do have people online waiting to testify. Is there questions to understand what the bill is proposing? Representative Guerra?
Madam Chair, there's a provision that Ms. Fisher-Goad's going to come back with amendments, or at least one amendment she mentioned, there's one I would like to ask her about if I could at this point. Ms. Fisher-Goad and then members of the committee, last year we passed a comprehensive energy bill, and in that bill was created a fund, a revolving loan fund, to help businesses upgrade their energy efficiency. And I think probably in the rush in passing that bill, that fund was put within either the Department of Commerce or ADA, but many people think it should be inside AEA, since AEA already has a staff that addresses building energy efficiency. And Ms. Fisher-Goad, I'm wondering whether you would be supportive of working on amendment on that to move that function over to AEA also. You already have the staff. You do energy efficiency. You've got akenergyefficiency.org. You work with the community on that already. Is that something that you would be supportive of and be able to help us with amendment language on as you come back with amendments?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I'm, of course, happy to work with you with respect to addressing the commercial energy efficiency loan issue. And for the committee, the legislation that passed last year on Senate Bill 220, it was actually a repeal and reenactment of an existing loan program in the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development. The fund remains with Commerce. It is not capitalized. This was also something that was addressed in the governor's energy report that was released on January 31st. AEA and Commerce have been working on changes to the program with respect to where a commercial energy efficiency loan program should exist. At this point, I don't think this is the appropriate legislation for this. However, I again will be happy to work with Representative Guerra to address the energy efficiency loan program, and with the priorities and what we're trying to accomplish this session, we quite frankly just kind of ended up becoming an interim project for us to work on. But if I may just plug with one respect of what AEA is doing for commercial energy efficiency is we do have an energy efficiency audit program, a pilot program that we've started with ERA funds. It has been quite successful, and I think we will be able to build upon that with respect to addressing what the commercial energy efficiency needs would be.
Thank you. Representative Guerra, follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just try and read what you said. Is moving the energy efficiency fund, the private business energy efficiency fund, is that something that you're willing to do, but you'd rather do it in a different piece of legislation, or is it something you haven't yet decided you want to do?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think this is something that we are working to address with both Commerce and ADA. Again, it is with the it is addressed in the governor's report. So I think we're exploring the options of how it should be structured and who should have ownership of that fund, and also what it should look like. I think there's some concerns with respect to the limitations of the loans of the existing language that passed in SB 220 last year.
Representative Guerra, follow up?
Thank you. I'm not going to get anywhere moving it to your agency if your agency doesn't want it. But do I hear your agency doesn't yet want it until you keep working with the Department of Commerce, which frankly surprises me, but tell me.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, apologize. I haven't intended on saying that. It's not that we don't want it. It's just that we need to do some more work on which is appropriate, which is the appropriate structure and the appropriate owner of the program. And I think there is, just some additional work to be done on how that can be structured. Is a loan guarantee program the best process to do that? What is deficient in the program? We just haven't had enough time to make that a priority to address that loan program. And there is a loan program that exists. It is not capitalized right now. And that loan program does exist in Commerce. And again, we have been working with Commerce to address the potential transfer of that program to the Alaska Energy Authority.
Representative Guerra, could I ask you to take this offline? And then if you believe it's important to put that amendment forward, work with EEA to get that prepared for us so that we can take up that amendment. Is that acceptable?
Sure.
Representative Wilson, followed by Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the Rail Belt Energy Fund, is this the fund currently used by most of the co-ops in our state?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the existing Rail Belt Energy Fund is a fund. It's a state fund. It's not an AEA fund. There's a long history of the use of the Rail Belt Energy Fund that has included more than just energy projects. My understanding, the original capitalization of that fund was remaining money from the original efforts with the Susitna project. The Rail Belt Energy Fund has been used for interties in the Rail Belt area. There's some existing appropriations for, actually the Fire Island intertie is an appropriation that is, it's appropriated from the Rail Belt Energy Fund, and there's also appropriations with respect to intertie repairs and upgrades and an extension of the Alaska intertie. So it's again a fund that's been used for a variety of things, not always necessarily energy projects.
Representative Poulsen.
Thank you. We may need to clarify because that really didn't help me a whole lot. I guess better if you could just get to me the projects currently that are being used, what funds are being paid out to what projects, so I can kind of have a better understanding of what this fund has been doing, and then by doing all this transfer, what you hope to accomplish, and you can just send it to the vice chair and she can get the answer to all of us.
Actually, if we could send that to Representative Stoltz's office, he'll distribute that to the committee.
And Madam Chair, it actually that we'll make sure that it gets to the committee. Representative Stoltz was the legislator that asked for the history of the fund. We were able to pull that together. And I did also want to clarify that the capital appropriation that's being requested in the governor's budget of $65.7 million is actually the unencumbered balance of the existing Rail Belt Energy Fund.
Thank you. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, you just answered one of my questions. And given what we're doing here, I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to have several questions before I understand this. And I'm not saying that you're deficient in your explanation so much as I'm probably deficient in my understanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Duke and Representative Edgman.
I know we need to get to public testimony here. We'll have additional time to sort of debate the bill, but just a real sort of broad brush question. We passed a bill. In fact, it passed the House, House Bill 119, that expanded AIDA's authority, gave it more, put economic development action statutes. And AIDA's got a lot of authorities, we know, to bond up to $400 million. Now we have to come to legislature, people on more than $10 million projects, and yada, yada. But why would this whole effort not be under AIDA with those authorities in place, those powers in place, given that the Board of Directors is the same for both AIDA and AEA? Why wouldn't you, you know, just put house it in one entity as opposed to creating a whole other structure?
Through the Chair, Representative Edgman, one of the things that I think that the Board of Directors, as both AEA and then as AIDA, did in 2008 is to really further distinguish AEA's mission as a corporation versus AIDA's. AIDA is not a parent corporation of AEA. They are sister corporations, and even after the removal of powers of AEA, it did remain and continues to remain a separate and distinct corporation with a mission to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska. AIDA's mission is really a jobs and economic development mission. And one thing that was accomplished with the creation of having two executive directors was for the agency with some shared staff to be able to pursue those missions separately. And I know AIDA has been very active in front of the legislature with a variety of legislation to expand its powers to move forward with the efforts of its strategic plan. And at the same time, AEA has been able to move forward with many energy efforts, such as the energy pathway that my predecessor, Steve Hagenson, spearheaded. So I think in some respects, it's a matter of effort and separate missions with respect to the two agencies. Representative Edgman?
Well, I don't have to smile, Madam Chair, because last year we tried valiantly to get interest in creating a Department of Energy, but we were told that grows government, and that's probably not where we want to go. And I'm seeing that the Alaska Energy Authority, that rightfully so, will finally attain its status as state government, maybe become a division or a department down the road somewhere, because energy is a big, big issue in the state, and it's not just Susitna.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. And I'll be brief. I'll ask a question, because I know we have people online. But we have public comment right after next. But could you delineate it or list out where the opportunities are going to be in the future where public comment is going to be available on the project, not just with the state, but what FERC's process is? And you can do that and get back with us. I think all of us, a lot of constituents will be interested, and we can pass that information along.
And through the Chair, Representative Guttenberg, I really appreciate that question. I was going to mention that in my original testimony, too. One thing that we had done with a preliminary decision document that AEA developed is we have gone through a public hearing process through the rail belt to describe the process on coming up with the recommendation to pursue Susitna, not the Chakachamna project. In doing so, I believe it has created a bit of a confusion or a concern from constituents and residents of the area that somehow this was going to be the only opportunity for them to testify on or provide any type of public comment with respect to us pursuing Susitna. But the legislation allows us to start the preliminary permit application with FERC. The FERC licensing process has a required public process, so we will be going through FERC public hearing processes throughout this this time. So thank you very much for that question.
Thank you. Is there a continued objection to the adoption of the CS for House Bill 103, Energy?
No.
Seeing the objection removed, the CS is adopted. With that, I'd like to move into public hearing. We'll be discussing the fiscal note at a later date. Bob Penny, are you online?
Yes, I am, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Penny, your testimony for the record.
is Bob Penny. I live in Soldotna. For over 50 years before that, I lived in Anchorage. And to summarize, I'm going to say to you, please pass out HB 103 as soon as possible. I'd like to touch, Madam Chair, on a little bit of history that goes back 25 years that I think is very important that your committee and other people on this know about because of the fact what's happening today. 3 years ago, then Mayor George Sullivan called me and said, I want you to work on the Susitna Dams. From that, we soon organized Susitna Now and the Energy Committee of the Anchorage Chamber. We worked almost full-time for the next 4 years with the great committee. Panel Fry, Dave Gottstein, and I of that committee followed Senators Ed Dankworth and Jelmar Kutula's direction as pro bono workers. Through the whole process, part of which was the four dam pool, Kodiak, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell, Solomon Gulch, they cost about $500 million. Bradley Lake was $320 million. The power cost equalization for rural Alaska with direct aid to date through 2012 will be around $600 million in grants. With the endowment to that fund of approximately $326 million, the total for power cost equalization fund will soon be approaching $1 billion. With this and almost $900 million for the five dams, it will be close to $2 billion that has been granted to other sections of the state as a direct trade-off for the rail belt receiving Susitna. Alas, in 1985, the Susitna was canceled for a couple of reasons. $290 million was then put into a rail belt energy fund. Over the years, that has been spent for all kinds of projects, and you can look it up under Legislative Research Report, January 22, 2010, Report number 10.116 that clearly defines where the monies have been spent, the four dam pool, and everything we're talking about today in a very legal manner. Now we understand that there's $65.7 million remaining in that fund, and that's what you're looking at for Watonna. We suggest you fund it all now if you can, because help AEA as much as they can with the process. It's going to be difficult them to give 2 or 3 year contracts when they're relying on 1 year funding, and I hope you'll look at that. All five dams and the PCE were a trade-off so Railwood could have the Susitna. It's my personal opinion from being there that none of those projects would have been built or funded without the Susitna. You might say those areas got theirs, and there's been very little in comparison to the Railwood. Please be concerned about the sectional issues as you go forward. They can cause a big delay, and I hope you have the history done to show that those other places have received what they agreed to some 25 years ago. It started in 1985. Both Watonna, two states Watonna plus its sister Devil's Canyon would have cost $5.6 billion. They would be producing now twice the energy as we will see from Olentana. We wouldn't have the shortage of natural gas in Cook Inlet today if they had been built and completed in 95. There would be 15 years plus of gas still in reserves in Cook Inlet that has been used to generate electricity ever since then. You're going to have people ask you what's wrong with Olentana. And from my experience, and I think from a layman's standpoint, I know quite a bit about it. And our answer to that is zero. We don't know something that's wrong. We haven't seen anybody name one. Seismic, fishery, environmental, we don't know of one. The studies that cost $142 million in Susitna are very apt and true today. The pile is 5.5 foot tall. You don't have to do them all over again. Just upgrade them for the FERC application. I think you'll find they're very, very supportive. And Madam Chairman, something close to my heart. Let's stand tall. Make Alaskans proud. Show this is our opportunity. We can be the captains of our future. We can show the country Alaska can do this without federal dollars. Paint an Alaska flag in the face of that dam. We can finance it ourselves. Create a heritage for the future. You'll all look back someday and be proud you helped create the project. ANWR is great. No gas line. No oil flow. No Uncle Ted anymore. Shell stopped. Where's their white light someplace in the tunnel? We need that project. $4.7 billion will give our whole state a big lift. Please structure AEA like the old. governor-appointed board. But give them the tools they need to proceed with and get on. Next year, please revisit Wetana, not now, to be expandable. In Pennywise and Pound Foolish, the second half of Wetana will be icing on the cake. The least amount of cost for the most energy for the best price. Please look at next year. Very quickly, Madam Chairman, today at 4 p.m., a few minutes from now, our organization meeting of Sucitha Hydro, Unlock Renewable Energy, or SURE, we will be a citizen group advocating for advocating by an array of citizens from utilities, representatives from municipalities, environmental, engineering, and fisheries. We will have a speakers forum for chamber, rotary, and their interested people. We can give you a list of people on the organization committee. We will have a beautiful organization like we had 30 years ago. We'll see what looks correct and look for it. We'll see what we don't like, and we'll look into that. All of our work will be done by private funding. We will be there to help you, Madam Chair, the legislature, and everyone else we can with respect and credibility, just like we did 30 years ago. We have filed state corporation papers. We are a 501c6, and we'll have a board election at the end of April, and we look forward to working with the legislature in the future. Summarizing, Madam Chairman, we had a statement 25 years ago that I believe is still true today. The Sucitna project is the most environmentally acceptable hydro project anywhere under the U.S. flag. We please encourage you to go forward, pass on HB 103, and we thank you for this opportunity. Any questions?
Questions from committee members? Mr. Penny, thank you for your service to our state, and we appreciate you testifying today on HB 103.
Thank you, ma'am.
Becky Long, are you with us online?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
We can, Becky, if you just state your name for the record.
Okay, for the record, I am Becky Long, and I live in the Talkeetna area, and we will be one of the first people that are affected by the negative impact of the Sucitna Dam. And I am testifying because I am opposed to HB 103 because it does give the authority to the Alaska Energy Authority to move forward with the FERC application processing. And I am opposed to the Sucitna Dam for many reasons. One thing I think that needs to be brought up and clarified, and I understand what the Attorney General's office has said, but there really has been no meaningful public review on the state level for this proposal. All we have gotten from the Alaska Energy Authority, and they were not public hearings, they were five open house PowerPoint presentations and lectures where one could only ask questions on a file card, and this was in five communities. There was no discussion, no opportunity for comments and follow-up questions. There needs to be a meaningful public review on the state level for this project. I understand that we will have plenty of time during the FERC process for a public process, but that is on down the line, and we are committing significant state financial resources on this one project. We're putting all our eggs in one basket on this one project to be the 50% renewable mandate. I think there needs to be some sort of conceptual amendment that or something like that that requires the Alaska Energy Authority to conduct a state public process regarding the Sucitna Dam, similar to what was in the Alaska Power Authority. And there needs to be an independent financial review of the cost benefits of the proposal that reflects the true overall cost, which includes all the project-related life cycle costs, including state subsidies and the environmental damage costs. The administration is asking for the appropriation for this year, $65.7 million. In FY 2013, they want $32 million. In 2014, $33 million. 2015, $20 million. 2016, $10 million, for a total of $162+ million for 5 years for planning, design, and permitting and licensing. This is a lot of resources to commit to this project, and I really don't think this is the best use of our public money, especially when there are so many new technologies coming online with tidal Energy efficiency is really big. Investing in energy efficiency is so important. I mean, we do know from previous studies that a 50% improvement in rail belt electrical efficiency could generate up to a $947 million increase in economic output, $290 million in wages, $53 million in business income, and 9,350 new jobs. And with that efficiency, we could have a 425 megawatt reduction in electrical demand. This is so important. And already we are seeing that the Susitna Dam proposal is the appropriation will be more than for any of the other renewable programs, which is $25 million for round four of the renewable energy grant and $26.5 million for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation weatherization program. So already Susitna is starting to take a priority over other renewable projects. And I just think all this needs to be considered on the state level. I mean, when have the public been able to say that this is the most appropriate use of our money? And we are going to be the first one, the Talkeetna area, the Trapper Creek area, if anything happens to that dam, if our fisheries are impacted negatively, we're going to be one of the first ones that are going to feel the impact. And they might not happen right away, but over the long term, we could have some serious impacts to our economy. Thank you.
Becky, we do have a question. I would like to focus the committee. Becky, first, I hear your opposition to the Susitna project loud and clear. HB 103 sets up an organization to deal with multiple projects throughout state government. So just for clarity, are you in opposition to the bill because it creates a vehicle that could promote the Susitna project, or just opposition of the bill, or just opposition of Susitna? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just trying to understand and appropriately, for my notes, reflect it on the testimony received here today.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you for your question. It is really opposition to the Susitna, and reason why people like myself have been focusing on HB 103 is because we have no way to have a public hearing, public testimony. So HB 103 and SB 42 has been the only way we have been able to express our opposition.
Becky, thank you so much. We do have questions. We will be asking the AEA how they would put a project into play. I understand the concerns that you've expressed. We do have several questions, if you could hang on for just a few minutes. Representative Edgman, followed by Representative Guerra.
Just a quick comment, Madam Chair, to say that I support the caller's comments about the larger statewide focus and certainly not everything being directed towards the Susitna, but that in talking with the AA Stanford just a moment ago, that I did get clarification. I think we're going to hear in more detail just exactly what's involved, but there will be a statewide process involved and further public process involved. Obviously, the money that would be appropriated this year, assuming it does, just continues the process further in the feasibility stage so that there will be a further public process, and I'll support that. And then also I'll relate that to the FERC comments that the caller made, too, and hopefully when we get Sarah back up here, we can ask in a more detailed manner on these questions.
Thank you. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Becky, I appreciate the comments. You asked many of the questions that I also have, and I will just share with you and the committee one of my frustrations about this process, which was the summer we got a report saying Susitna seemed like the preferable project to Chacachabna. It had lesser fisheries impacts, and that struck me as odd because there are potentially significant fisheries impacts on the Susitna project. They may be able to be mitigated, maybe not. So I wrote the AEA and I wrote the Department of Fish and Game, and the answer was that they have not yet fully assessed the fisheries impacts. And so to get a report this winter saying no problem on the fisheries impacts and then to find out later on that they haven't really been assessed has raised a red flag for me. So I'll be asking questions.
Becky, thank you for for joining us this afternoon and for waiting so long to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, is there anyone else online wishing to testify on HB 103? Is there anyone here in Juneau that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. With that, I would direct committee members, we do have the CS in front of us. This is the structure. We've heard testimony both in favor of the structure and in opposition to the structure. If you could forward your questions to Sarah at AEA, that would be helpful. And Sarah, any responses, if you could send those to Representative Stoltz's office. We will be reviewing the fiscal notes at a later time. And now I would like to move on to HB 127.
Madam Chair, just so I understand.
Representative Guerra.
I know the bill nowhere discusses the Sisseton Power Project, but the bill is sort of about the Sisseton Power Project. Are we going to be able to delve into the economics of that project before we pass the bill out? Are we going to have that opportunity?
Representative Guerra, it will be the latitude of the chairman that has the gavel when that bill comes back. This is the structure, certainly. We can talk about what projects are there, but I'm not certain that it would be it will be up to the discretion of the chair. So if you would ask Representative Stoltz, I'm sure we can discuss it, Representative Guerra. This is the tool to accomplish one thing, and there are projects that we could talk about for many days that might enter this particular process. So if you believe that this bill allows something to happen that you're in opposition to, you will move my testimony more in speaking to the functions inside the actual bill before us versus an individual project that might be proposed from that entity. So there are two different things at stake here.
Through the chair, this bill moves $67 million to AEA. The governor has announced he's using that money to start up work on the Sisseton Hydro Project. So we know the bill is about the Sisseton Hydro Project. And I think this is the only bill that we're going to have where we get to ask the questions about the economics of the project. So I'll speak to the chair. But
Representative Guerra, if I have the chair, we can speak about Sisseton. Ms. Long waited a long time to testify, and that's why I allowed the testimony to move into the project.
Sure.
Representative Dugan.
Madam Chair, a couple things. I've now heard this project referred to by three different names. What are we calling it at this moment, if you wouldn't mind?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, the Sisseton project and the Watonna project is the site in which the dam is. I think the Sisseton project in the 80s was the two dam project, not just the one. So we try to refer to it as both the Watonna and Sisseton. In some respects, they're interchangeable, but we are meaning the Watonna site for the project. That's what we're, that's our reference to it. And Madam Chair, if I might, there is the capital appropriation. This bill does not appropriate $67 million to the Alaska Energy Authority. There is a capital appropriation to allow us to move forward with the preliminary permit application and the licensing and design process. So there is, I think, another avenue, and I have been in touch with staff of Representative Stoltz with respect to what type of information the committee wants to hear, and we'll make available the project manager and our engineering firm to further discuss the FERC process at the convenience of the committee.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was doing okay till you said that. My understanding was that $67 million, which now resides, you know, in whatever fund it's in, was going to move to a different fund and was going to be used exclusively for, you know, work on the Sisseton project. Am I not correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Dugan, there's two items that allow us to move forward with the project. One is the legislation, and the other is a capital appropriation. So what I was trying to clarify is that this bill does not move the dollars. There is an appropriation bill that has a proposal in the governor's capital budget to appropriate 65 It's actually a 65.7. It's the balance of the Railroad Energy Fund to the Alaska Energy Authority as a capital appropriation to move forward with the project. So there's two things that are needed. One is the legislation, and the other is the capital appropriation. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. We'll set this aside. House Bill 103, the public hearing has been closed. Just ask committee members, again, if you have questions, to ask the agency so that you're prepared to talk about the structure that's before us. I do understand that there is a resemblance of the Susitna Dam project in here, and please just let's be prepared to look at those fiscal notes and ask those questions. Representative Edgman.
Yes, I have a question, but it doesn't pertain to a bill. How long are we going to go today?
Representative Edgman, I'm trying to get through the third bill, and I was thinking that we would ask the departments to shorten the front of their conversation so that we might see if there's public hearing, open it, and close it. And I'm certain if someone else wants to testify, we'll move that on to the chairman. But if the Department of Law would please come forward. 4:15, if you're looking for an outside chair, and that isn't an opportunity for Department of Law to engage for that length of time.
I can do this much faster than this. Madam Chairman, my name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. I'm a little confused about what was supposed to happen today. I thought we were having our hearing tomorrow on this bill, but I'm here and available to go through the sectional. I understand there were two bills that you were going to that had been combined into one CS. I'm at your disposal.
Thank you, Ms. Carpinetti. Ms. Carpinetti, we have the CS for House Bill 127 Finance before us that rolls together House Bill 127 and 175. That was announced, I believe, yesterday. So if I could have a motion and then an objection.
Madam Chair, I can move CS for House Bill number 127 Finance. 27-GHIR1840/I.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. And that was 27-GH1840/I. There's been an objection. Ms. Carpinetti, my instructions for the day were to present the bill to the committee as combined so that the general public had an opportunity to comment today if they want. I'll close that hearing, and if Representative Stoltz wants to open that hearing again tomorrow, that was my direction.
Would you like me to describe the combination, or does everybody?
Representative Dugan.
Madam Chair, if you could describe what's happened with to make the two bills one bill, I'd certainly appreciate it.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. The governor early this session introduced House Bill 127 addressing stalking, exploitation of children, and various other related aspects of statutory change. I'm happy to go through the specifics of that. Would you like me to?
Madam Chair, I think I recall the last passed through the bill.
Okay.
All I want to do is make sure if there's any changes to the two bills in making them one bill.
Okay. Changes in the CS.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Also earlier in the session, House Bill 175, which we call a fix-up bill, it addresses four inconsistencies between our statutes and our court rules, were included in House Bill 175. They were both addressed fairly thoroughly in House Judiciary, and when they came here, it was suggested that the two bills be combined, and that is what has happened. I went through the proposed CS in my office today, and I did a sectional, which I have available for you, and it is exactly the same. There's no change in substance in the bills as they are put together.
Thank you.
Is that sufficient for the committee? With that, thank you. Is the objection maintained for adopting the CS for House Bill 127 Finance?
Objection removed.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, the CS is adopted and before the body. With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on the CS for House Bill 127. And for anyone listening, that does mean there's a combination or that the House Bill 175 would be appropriate to speak to at this time. It has been rolled into one bill. Public hearing is now open. Is there any members of the community online? Are there any members in the audience who would like to testify on House Bill 127, Finance? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed. With that, Ms. Carpinetti, I believe we've accomplished our work prior to 4:15. Is there any additional comments from committee members? If I could ask you to review the fiscal notes and the CS, and with that, I believe House Bill 175 will stay in the House Finance Committee, and the vehicle to move that bill is incorporated into the CS for House Bill 127, Finance. With that, let me review our agenda. Tomorrow, Friday, April 1st, 2001, the Finance Committee will meet here in room 519 at 1:30. We'll be taking up House Bill 127, which we just closed the public hearing on. House Bill 175, court appearances, was rolled into the 127, just trying to keep the public on that. House Bill 203, In-State Natural Gas Pipeline Fund, and bills previously heard or scheduled could come up tomorrow afternoon. Does anyone need any further out than that? Saturday, the meeting has been canceled. So the next time we will see you after Friday is Monday, April 4th, again at 1:30 p.m., and there we'll be taking up House Bill 142. With that, thank you for staying and helping us move those bills out. With that, we're adjourned.
Good afternoon.